All right, welcome to episode 18 of the Cowcast, Shop Talk. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Eric.
I am James.
And we are going to talk about a fun topic here today on our Shop Talk discussion. But before we do that, we've got some listener questions. One of the listeners that sent in a question was at Zach Figg on Twitter. He's one of our followers. So we've got that mixed in with a couple of other questions that we've had, and we're going to kind of answer them all in one fell swoop. So, James, why don't you go ahead and take it away with the questions?
Sure. So we're going to kind of amalgamate these questions into just a couple different questions so we don't sound too repetitive, because some of this would be stuff that we've talked about in the last couple of podcasts. But we'll just start off with the question of which book for us in the recent past had the biggest drop off, or books, I should say. I think Civil War II would definitely be our number one, where we had, I would say by the time we hit issue 2, 3, 4, we were selling a lot of copies. We probably have 15 to 20 copies of issues 7 and 8 on the shelf right now. It just died off. People just lost interest. They didn't care. And that's something where the follow-up question to that is sort of what could we have done to sell them better? At that point, once a reader is 5 or 6 issues into a series, they bought the first 5 or 6 issues. I don't know what more as a retailer you can do to get them to come back and keep buying it. I think that was a great example to us of where it doesn't matter how great and enthusiastic of a retailer you are, if readers and buyers don't like the product, they're going to stop getting it.
Yeah, and I think this was a case of a number of different things playing into it. So I think there was starting to be a little bit of event fatigue, mm-hmm. and then couple that in with delays, and then now we're adding a book to the end of it again, and I think it just got to be too much to overcome, even if the book was great. I mean, I think it was just too much for that one to overcome.
Yeah, it was more apathy than anything else that we saw that led people to just stop buying it.
Yeah.
And it was, again, you know, when we were 4 or 5 issues into the series, we thought this is going to be gangbusters. But I guess if we would sit down and do the math on all the issues sold, we probably made profit, but not a ton.
Right.
Just because people stopped caring. The tie-in series were miserable. No, I mean, we would sell maybe 3 or 4 copies of each tie-in series.
Yep.
The kind of capstone book, The Oath, that was a complete and total stinker. We kind of explained that to people what it was, and they just sort of rolled their eyes at it. Civil War II would be the best answer to both questions of the biggest drop-off and what could a retailer have done better. Just because we couldn't have done anything differently on it. I mean, we still pushed it. We had an entire separate Civil War II section, mm-hmm. with all the Civil War II tie-in books and one-shots and miniseries and the main series right up by the register. It had a section on the Marvel shelf. We would have a very prominent section for it on the new Marvel new shelf when it would come out every week. And it just, again, it just died. Nobody cared. It was just complete apathy. So, you know, again, with that, what more could we have done? I don't want to completely absolve myself of anything, but I don't think there was much more that we could have tried to push that book on anyone. People just decided they didn't want it.
Yeah, it just gets to a point where it's on the publisher and the writer and the artist at that point to sell it. And you get someone 5 issues into an 8-issue series. Like you said, what more can you do?
Well, and now here's the other part of that is what, for us, is there a lot of motivation to buy the, I don't know, what is, you know, $50 hardcover collection of the series now? Are we going to keep that stocked on the shelf when we've got 50-some issues of Civil War II sitting 10 feet away from it?
And so for those of you keeping score at home, the answer is no.
Right.
We're not going to. If somebody wants that hardcover and they come and pre-order, yes, we'll of course get it in. But
I guess that would be my best answer. Civil War II. I think one topic that folds in well are books that were super hot but then burned out. I don't think Civil War II was was ever like a, you know, a speculator book or something that people were buying multiple copies of. I think everybody kind of knew what it was. But a good example for us would be Reborn, where Reborn came out of the gate extremely strong, and now I think we're down to 2 subscribers on it. And oddly enough, Curse Words, when that came out, we sold out of the first issue in, I think, a day or 2 days. I think it was either sold out by the end of our Wednesday or the next day. And we had people calling from Milwaukee, from Madison. We had people calling from 45 minutes to an hour away to find that book. So what did we do? We upped our orders for the second issue, and we upped our orders for the second print that popped up on our FOC. And we got in a bunch of copies of Curse Words 2, all the variants for it, and the second print. And by the time we put those orders in, we had all of the people that had added Curse Words, I think all but 2 have dropped it now from their pull list. So Curse Words was one that was, it burned bright for a very short period of time. Not that we're not still selling it. I mean, we are selling it, but people were frothing at the mouth for it. And now we sell a couple copies. Another book that did the same thing was Atoll, the shark book. Now, for some reason, this is like a shark renaissance in comics. You've got Hookjaw, you've got White, you've got Atoll, and I think, and there's another one in previews too.
Yep.
I don't know what is leading the shark renaissance. I wonder if sharks are going to become the new zombies. But
let's hope they don't jump the shark.
Oh, okay. but for whatever reason, when Atoll came out, that was a super hot book. I mean, that book was going for $15, $20 on eBay. We had gotten 10 copies of the first issue, I think, and we sold out right away. I mean, we had people buying multiple copies, but they went to multiple people. And we ended up, after we sold out, we went on Diamond and they were still in stock. So we bought some more of them and put some out on the shelf. We sat on some of them too. And then the second issue came out yesterday. Nobody cares. Nobody wants it. All the people that bought 2, 3, 4 copies of the first issue, nobody wants Atoll. We've got a big stack of 15 Atoll number 2s on the shelf. And I've talked to some of the people that bought the first one, and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to buy the second one. So that's an example of a book that it just came out of the gate gangbusters, and it just pooped out completely.
Then you've got a couple of other titles. The one that came to my mind was Animosity. And that one came out super hot. I don't know how quickly they went to second and third printings on it.
I think they had 5 printings of it.
Yeah, I think they ended at the fifth print. They said that they were done at that. And that one hasn't dropped off as precipitously as the other books you mentioned, but it's been a very steady decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a delay, and then they put out a one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not reading the series. I read the first issue. I liked it. But we sold out of the book, or out of the series, so I put my copy back on the shelf because we're good retailers.
Right.
And I haven't been able to read anything past that. I've been able to read plenty of, or I could have read plenty of Animosity from issue 3 and up because it just started kind of, again, not completely dying off, but.
And how good of retailers are we? For those of you that are listening, we are so good that one of us sitting here brought back his 7 to Eternity number 1 to sell at the shop before he even read it.
That's very true.
So, which, that was the right thing to do. So
it was the right thing to do. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's the really interesting thing are those books that, I think it's kind of evident of a larger, you could view it as sort of a microcosm of what the variant market is today.
Yeah.
Where there are, for every Curse Words, Animosity, Atoll, Reborn. You've got the same thing with the Marvel 1 in 25, 1 in 50 variants, that Del Otto variant, where a lot of them are going to, you know, in 3-4 weeks or 2 months, they're going to be going for cover price, $10 maybe. But then you've got those ones that do hang ahead of the pack and end up becoming $50, $60, $70 books.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. So anyone who listens to our podcast and that also listens to John Mayos, he talks about, he does the monthly number recap. And the one thing that you'll notice is there's a number of books that come out of the gates screaming hot from a sales standpoint. Largely, those are things that are going to be Marvel or DC, big events, Rebirth, Civil War, whatever it is. They're going to be big all the time. But then you look at some of these other ones like the Reborn, the Atoll, Animosity. Those show up so far down on the list, you know, 3,000, 4,000 copies, that those get a really hyper-hot market from a secondary market standpoint instantly because they're shorted. They can't, you can't get them. Some people want them. So there's different factors at play, I think, too, as to what causes those.
Yeah, I think it's, again, if you want to talk about, like we've said before, I wonder how much of this is a giant game of hot potato with titles like this, where when the book when Atoll does crash, it may have crashed already for all I know. Do you want to be the guy that's holding 30 copies of it that you ran around to every store and bought up at cover price? I just think that kind of, at some point, I worry about books like that are only being sold to speculators or to resellers or other comic vendors, where how much of it is kind of just a shell game market, you know, just moving the book from me to you to him and back to me. And I'm hoping I'm not the one that's stuck with it, you know, when the bottom falls out. And I think about that every time we have something like those books that we just talked about. Now, that's not to say that, you know, God Country is a big one. Everybody's after that right now. Even the second print of the first issue is going for $10. But you can come into our store and get it for cover price.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. So some of our local competitors will take books like that and mark them up. And to me, they run a high risk of selling that book. We would much rather sell that book off the shelf, take the cover price, take whatever profit that publisher is giving us, put it in the bank.
Well, and again, a great example, and I can't remember if we talked about this on a past episode or not, but a great example would be when, not to sound callous, but when Carrie Fisher died.
Right.
Now, we had dozens of copies of Princess Leia on the shelf from that miniseries, and all of a sudden, we had a ton of people coming in to pick that book up. That we never would have sold that. We were thrilled beyond belief to get $3.99 an issue for it. I know of some other retailers who took all of those books and marked them up to $10 or $15, and then complained that they weren't selling them when they could have sold all of them
at cover price,
right. Which a day before they would have been thrilled beyond belief to sell. So you can't get super greedy as a retailer and expect it to pay off. You don't want to be that guy from 1991 that was stuck with four long boxes of Fish Police in your back room. You know, it's a smaller market, but it is still the same symptom.
Yep,
I think. So FOC. Again, is a great thing because we talked about, and this is where with Curse Words and with God Country, we jumped on FOC when everybody was after those books and the second printings popped up and we were able to up our orders for the consecutive following issues. FOC is relatively quick. I mean, sometimes the FOC is, you know, it's just a couple of weeks before it ships out. But even in that couple of weeks time, the fire under a book can completely die.
Yep.
And you can be quick, you can be a retailer that's Johnny on the spot with realizing what people are after and doing your best to up your orders on it. But with books like that, it really is, it's hot potato, and you know, who knows when you're gonna get stuck with it. So I don't want to say we're necessarily super conservative on ordering those books, but I think we understand that risk at least. And
yeah.
So we're not going to order 50 copies of Curse Words, of the second printing, to get the Glitter Cat 1 in 50 variant that they're offering. Which, by the way, you still have to pay $5 for some reason, to get the 1 in 50. I don't get that one.
All right, what's next?
Next up.
I'm just leaving the Glitter Cat where it lays.
Yeah. Have you seen that? Did you see the cover?
I saw the cover.
Okay. Would you pay $5 for it?
Probably not.
Either would I. What are some books that you think that we could have done more to sell? Hmm. What is something that's sitting on the shelf right now that we could have made? We could have made some great signage, or we could have placed on the rack right next to the register. What's something that we could have done a better job selling?
It's a great question.
You said one of them before we recorded that I thought of. It ties in with a TV show on Netflix. Or Netflix shows. It's not even really... Well, you watch it on your TV. You know what I'm talking about?
I called out a handful of stuff over there, so I called out... Well, what did I call out?
Jessica Jones.
Yeah. We could... Yeah. I guess we could have done a little bit more of a push with that. We could have probably sold a handful more, but...
Yeah. That... Okay, so that ties into something else that we've been talking about. And I, you know, if somebody's from Marvel is listening, sorry, but...
We still like you.
We really do. And you'll notice that we have upped our orders by about 40 times what we had normally been ordering. But, so money talks. We have been seeing and hearing Bendis burnout.
Yes.
The current... I think people just stop caring. People don't want to buy Guardians right now with Bendis. And I know his last issue is coming up, but... Jessica Jones is one of those titles where Bendis excels at writing that book. He excels at writing that character. He created the character.
Right.
It is his. It's a perfect style for Bendis. But Bendis has been... He's been drawn out in so many different Marvel books, so many team books, and who knows what over the last couple of years, that when you get a book like Jessica Jones by the original creative team, tied in with a hit TV show... Netflix show. It should be a major seller, but it just wasn't. And whether or not... One person complained to us that they didn't like that Marvel changed the name of the comic to Jessica Jones. Now, that's minutiae and doesn't, you know...
Right, if that's going to be your sticking point.
Right, that's stupid. But I can understand somebody saying that they have Bendis fatigue. You know, yep. They're burned out on Bendis.
You got the event, you got... All the different books again, which is interesting because then you look at a creator like Jason Aaron. You don't hear about Jason Aaron burnout, and he is all over.
Give it another
6 months.
5 years. No, I would say 5 years, because Bendis has been, he's really been directing Marvel's. I mean, Hickman did, he did some universe control leading up to Secret War and whatnot, but. Bendis has been doing the majority of the heavy lifting for Marvel for a while, ever since he was brought on Avengers and did Disassembled and then launched New Avengers and four more volumes of New Avengers, or five more, whatever it is. I'd love for him to just quit Marvel and go back to writing crime books. I'd buy him. I would buy him. I think we would have more enthusiasm to sell Brian Bendis writing another Torso than we would him. It's just, at some point, you can only pretend so much. You can only fake enthusiasm to sell another Guardians of the Galaxy that you've read and just don't like.
Well, quite frankly, we don't.
No.
I mean, there comes a point where we don't. Like, there's creators that we definitely don't have fatigue from, that we love. And we go out of our way to champion those. And it's not that it's always the same ones that you and I may have. We have different ones, right? So I will champion Greg Rucka books because I really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
We both love Ed Brubaker.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's things like that. So
I'll buy anything with Garth Ennis's name on it.
Yes, you will. I guess other things that we could try and sell better.
Santa, it's a tough question because
it's a tough question.
You you want to think that you did all you could to sell
right.
what you had.
I've got one.
Go ahead.
There's one that I think we thought, in my opinion, I thought would sell itself better, and that's All-Star Batman. We have
that's
subscribers for it.
That's a good one.
It's not that we don't have subscribers for it, but I'm surprised that we don't have more.
Well, our numbers for All-Star Batman are under what our numbers for the Snyder Batman were.
Right. And we actually, you and I had a discussion about this yesterday. And we talked a little bit about what propped up the new 52 Batman. And, you know, certainly no offense to Scott Snyder at all, but I'd said outside of the first two volumes, the first two trades essentially of the new 52 Batman, Capullo was what kept me intrigued. The story was good, but the art was my favorite part. And I wonder if there isn't Scott Snyder fatigue setting in because of the style of writing. It's a long, drawn-out style. It's written specifically for the trade. And you've got, you know, there's some readers that just aren't...
Well, more than anything, I would say the $4.99 price point is what puts people off. Because Rebirth was billed at having $2.99 books. So somebody could... You spend one more dollar... And you get Batman and Detective, or you get two issues of Batman for every All-Star Batman. So I think DC kind of were their own worst enemy at driving people towards All-Star.
Yeah.
Because they pushed, why buy the Marvel book over here for $4.99 when you can get
the prestige Batman book?
Right. Two Batman or two Detective for $2.99. Oh, here's our big Batman book and it's $4.99.
Yeah.
So I mean, granted, they did,
the cover stock is thicker and things like that, but
yeah,
it's the content inside that people pages, are buying.
But yeah, but again, I think they were their worst enemy on that.
And I read the first couple issues of All-Star, and I've since dropped it, but I thought in a couple issues that I read, the backup story was better than the primary story.
I don't know. I haven't read it.
So that's the one that I guess I would look at. And also... This question is tough from the sense that we order, by and large, within, I'd say, 95%, we order what we know we can sell. And that's either stuff that sells itself or stuff that we can talk to with customers. And if they're looking for something, sell them to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sell it to them.
One that you were all on board for, and I agreed with you, although I think I jumped off the train a little bit before you did, that we both thought would be huge was Green Valley.
Yeah, and I'm still on the train because I really like it. I think it's a great book. I think – so if anyone listened to our San Diego podcast, they would know that our reaction to meeting Max Landis was like kind of a surreal, trippy experience. The guy was just very unique.
Well, and we – And I had you, he had done Superman American Alien. I had never read it,
which was
you had
phenomenal.
Read
phenomenal.
Great sales, a lot of buzz for the book.
It was phenomenal,
very well received. But then you know, then we met Max Landis, and I had never read anything or watched anything that he had written because he's a screenwriter. And I since then I've watched a couple of movies that he's written. Some I've liked, some I haven't. But I jumped on board the Max Landis train because when we met him, the enthusiasm. Of the
oh my gosh!
There,
yeah,
it was crazy. It was like,
and he had told us, you know, he grew up reading comic books, and this
yeah,
was, and he was on message boards like commenting on things in comics that he didn't think were right, and he decided that it was his time to put up or shut up, and he was going to do it.
It was like,
and damn it, he did it with Superman American Alien.
When I would go to a show at the Eagles Club, and then stand out back with my friends and, you know, five degree weather, just waiting, hoping that...
Oh, and that was April in Wisconsin, by the way.
Yeah. Just, you know, hoping that Dave Mustaine would walk out the back door to go to the tour bus or something. And that's what Max Landis reminded me of when you had these huge groupies. They were like groupies.
Yeah.
And the book... I guess there just weren't any of them in Oconomowoc because now we're down to one subscriber and that might be you.
Me.
There you go. But good. But you know, it was a good book. It's a good book, but it's just something where his fame and notoriety did not.
It didn't translate here, maybe necessarily.
But his fan base, they're not around here, and his name didn't turn into sales.
But that's not to say that it won't down the road with another title. Who knows? Yeah. There could be another Superman American Alien.
It's true.
And you know what? Darn it. I really like Green Valley. I like Superman American Alien, so I'll be buying the next one. Anyone out there who's looking for Green Valley, give us a shout. We can hook you up.
Yeah. Another one. Okay, so this is a really interesting one that I knew would be popular because I am a big fan of the writer and artist. Cerebus is in Hell Zero. When that book came out, I ordered a bunch of copies of the, yeah, it was a Zero issue, which was actually the first issue of the series, but it was issue Zero. I'm a big Dave Sim fan. I'm a big Cerebus fan. There aren't a lot of us out there. But I knew that Chris, the prior owner, I know he had been a big Cerebus fan, and it was that was a title that he had pushed on people. And if there's one thing about Dave Sim fans, it's that they will follow him to any weird crap that he puts out, like Glamour Puss. I don't know why he did it, but I read it. I got it. So a new Cerebus book. It was the first Cerebus since 2004. He wrote it. He illustrated it, just like he had for the past 300 whatever issues. We sold out of the Zero issue like right away. We had people calling from the surrounding cities to try to get a copy of Cerebus because nobody ordered it. None of the shops ordered it. It was, first off, it was published by Aardvark Vanheim, who published Cerebus. They are in the back of previews. They're not, I don't know the last time they published a book. The Cerebus trades are in print, but other than that, it was just a book that nobody really contemplated anyone coming in looking for, but we did. However, all of the Cerebus fans that picked it up came in, they're like, man, that sucked. Meanwhile, I'd upped our orders on one because we'd sold out of Zero. Now we've got a bunch of copies of one sitting on the shelf. It wasn't great. It was Dave Sim weirdness. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't. What should have been a big, a hook issue to get people on a new Cerebus series.
Swing and
it
a miss.
It wasn't. It was a swing and a hit for Dave Sim because he just doesn't care. That's the thing. And anybody who's a Cerebus fan or a Dave Sim fan knows what I'm talking about. But that's just another example of a book that came out of the gate really strong and then it just died. A book that's the complete opposite of that, one of those rare independent books that keeps climbing every issue. We've already said Seven to Eternity, which is sitting at a pretty comfortable number, but Kill or Be Killed.
It just goes keeps up, going up.
Every single issue we have to order more and more and more. And we keep selling out of it.
And that's one of those ones where it makes you and I very happy. Because we both love Brubaker. We love
the book.
Kill or Be Killed. So it's one of those things where for us, seeing that is just adds a big smile to the face.
Absolutely. While I'm opening my Hacker Shore.
Are there any other questions that we got from listeners?
No, I guess that really covers all of it. Okay. Again, there were some questions that we've kind of covered in the past.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be too repetitive. Just listen to the past couple of episodes.
And so if any of you out there have questions that you want answered, by all means, send them to us. You can either use Twitter, you can use our email. At the end of the episode, we give out all the social media stuff. You can shoot us a Facebook message. Heck, you can call us and we'll write them down if you want. Send in your questions.
We might answer more. We might ramble about all sorts of stuff that just comes to mind.
Yeah, we do that too.
But we'll probably answer your question.
So now, to the meat of this episode.
Do it! What are... This is just something that we've had some people inquiring about. If you're running a comic book store, what are the differences in the types of books with regard to ordering? You've got your Marvel and your DC. You can kind of split those up into subcategories if you have to, but I guess the bigger question is, how do you decide what to order when it comes to things like licensed books? Doctor Who, Rick and Morty, Transformers,
TMNT,
Ninja Turtles, right. And then your independent books, your IDW, not, well, I guess IDW is mostly licensed, but, you know, original Boom stuff, original IDW, Aftershock, Image, Dark Horse. Those new number ones that we were talking about before, Curse Words, Green Valley, Killer Be Killed. How do you decide to order, and in what quantities do you decide to order a book like that versus a book like Spider-Man? Something that, like, Spider-Man sells itself, but does something like Doctor Who or Transformers. I mean, Transformers has had more hit movies than Spider-Man has.
Power Rangers.
Power Rangers, great example. But then why do we not sell Transformers comics on par with Spider-Man?
Right.
You know, what's the story with that? So what are some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess first and foremost, when it comes to the ordering, we kind of talked about it on this episode and on previous episodes, we order what we know we can sell. Right. So there's a level of comfort with a product. So in a licensed product, there's a level of comfort with that that we know of beforehand that we use to inform ourselves on if we think we can sell it. Right. So if we both read the heck out of Transformers and we knew everything about it, anyone that comes in that even obliquely discusses a Transformers, we could probably sell them on a book, which isn't the case. So we automatically have kind of a tainted view per se on some things because maybe they're not the biggest book for us. I mean, honestly, we can't read every book that comes in this shop.
No.
We just don't have time.
Yeah, but okay, but with something like Transformers, I mean, why do we, with what you just said, shouldn't our Transformers orders be on par with Spider-Man?
I would say no. Because where did Transformers originate? Where did Spider-Man originate?
A Marvel comic.
I mean, well, that's touche. But I'm looking at where did the main popularity of them come from?
Sure.
Right? Spider-Man has grown up and lived through comics and branched into film.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like the Transformer universe has really grown and matured on the screen and then come to comics per se in a secondary.
So are licensed comics, in your opinion, are they a great moneymaker or is it sort of a...
It's a target market to me.
Okay. Which is kind of weird because you would think that your typical comic fare would be target market and your licensed stuff would be the kind of the wide net that you could get people with.
Well, you also have to take into account, in my opinion, the fact that you've got Batman, Superman, heroes from the late 30s to, you know, starting in the 40s on up. 75 years of history built there, right? You've got Spider-Man, you've got the Marvel Universe, 50 years of history there. You start to look at those things, and there's a lot more time for those products to mature in their raw state, in their raw form. So not only do you have kids of today, you've got kids our age, you've got kids our parents' age, you've got maybe not quite kids, but teenagers our grandparents' age. So you've got four generations right there that were aware of Spider-Man, of Batman, of Superman. And that right in and of itself sells something. And I think that that is a big change. Now, Power Rangers, if you think about Power Rangers, that really, I mean, Super Sentai has been around for 20-some years, I think. John Mayall would know the exact answer. Apologies, John, for not knowing that for you. But that's been around for, you know, 2 decades, let's just say. That's not as long as these other franchises. And it started in a different country and migrated here. So I think you've got to look at the history of these characters. Now, this, of course, is for looking at the licensed properties versus Marvel and DC staples.
Why isn't Gene Autry the most popular comic on the stands right now?
Ranger.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a really good example of something
John
completely
Wayne.
Past its prime, you know. But I guess the big question is how, if we're a retailer, how do we use the licensed books to, is that something that do we try to use that to get people in? If you have the Doctor Who section with the photo covers of David Tennant and Matt Smith, I think is his name. I'm not a Doctor Who watcher.
Not a Whovian?
I'm not.
You're not going to Gallifrey 1?
Or, Star Wars. Great example. Now, it's a Marvel book, but it's also a licensed property.
Sure.
They just happen to own the license to it. What, or share the license, I should say, with their parent company. Why is Star Wars a giant comic book, and why do they have to fight their way into the top 200? Doctor Who have to fight to get in there?
I think you can look at it in that case. I think you could say, and this is just me giving my opinions. This is not backed by any fact or knowledge, but I think the television screen versus the movie screen makes a big difference. And I also think you look at the level of licensed product over time. So there's always been Star Trek licensed product. You could always get the figures. You could always get the tricorders, the communicators, all of those things. But I would say that you could look at Star Wars and Lucasfilm as marketing geniuses.
Oh, sure.
Their figures were out before the film was out. They had their marketing merchandise in kids' hands before it even hit the screen. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Right? Similar to when Apple launched the iPod. They had the television commercials, those neon-colored commercials with the silhouetted people dancing before you could even buy the iPod.
And so, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Oh, I know. I'm the one
that ordered 100 copies of Star Wars and one copy of The Last Star Trek. I mean, it's...
Right.
But it's just an interesting thing to look at what there should be with regard to the licensed properties. And is it just sort of an untapped resource for retailers?
Now, here's a question for you that I'm going to play devil's advocate on.
I love it.
If Marvel... let's go this way. If DC owned the license to Star Trek...
They did.
And they put today. And they put a big-name creator as the writer. Would it sell better than sitting on IDW? Thinking about Jason Aaron writing Star Wars.
Yeah. Okay. I bet if they did an A-game launch with Grant Morrison doing Star Trek, I bet you'd sell 60,000 copies of it. I bet you would.
Yeah. So is it really the property all the time, or is it the creative talent that you're able to get for it?
Well, that's a big part of it, but I think more on the retailer side is...
It's a name.
Is it something that we, as retailers, sort of squandered? Should we put more effort into... Should we have a big window display with Doctor Who and... Rick and Morty and Bob's Burgers and all the other licensed titles that we could be using to attract people in here when they walk by that otherwise wouldn't come in. Do we squander that up? Do most retailers squander that? You know, are people going to come in here and buy Batman and Superman and Spider-Man anyways? Why are we advertising those when we should be advertising the things that get people in here? Like a licensed product. Should Titan be our number one publisher?
No.
Okay. One word answer.
No, I don't think so. I think that right now the industry rides on the back of Marvel and DC, and that's something I already talked about. It's their history. They've got that built in, right? So we already have...
Would you boil that down to what sells a comic book is continuity?
I think... yes and no. But I will say I think it's brand.
So when you just talked about Kill or Be Killed and how we can sell the hell out of that book.
Image is a brand.
Image is a brand. But if we were that enthusiastic and Doctor Who was that well written, would we be selling as many Doctor Who as we were Kill or Be Killed?
Can we be honest and say if Doctor Who was as well written as an Ed Brubaker book, we'd probably both be reading it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
So I think that says enough right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that brand notoriety plays a massive part in this. Daewoo made cars. How many people bought Daewoo cars? Not many, right?
I kind of want one now, though.
No, you don't. My grandfather had one. You don't. The brand notoriety was not there. They were known for making televisions and microwaves. It disappeared. They don't make those cars anymore, right? So there's a brand built in with Honda, Toyota, Chevy, Ford. Similar to comic books, there's a brand built in 25 years of Image being the indie place to go.
You've Mitsubishi, they made the Zeros. That...
Marvel and DC, right? So you've got Image, Marvel, and DC, which are the top three premier publishers. There's just a brand notoriety built in that, and I think that as far as a reader goes, or even a new reader, there's a level of expectation. When you come in and you pick up a Marvel, DC, or Image book, there's a level of expectation that it should represent some of the highest quality published comic material. Now, as retailers, as readers, we know that's a farce because that is not always the case. I would say that, I'm trying to think, what was Strange Fruit published under? Was that Boom?
It was Boom.
Friggin' amazing.
Yeah, that was Mark Waid.
It was Mark Waid and J.G. Jones. Mm-hmm. Massive delay on issues 3 and 4, but wow. It was unbelievable. So it's not always the case. Boom has shown us that they are a good publisher. But people coming in aren't going to know that. So I think there's a lot of brand notoriety built in, whether it's good or bad.
So you're saying that if Boom was a bigger company, that we'd sell more Rick and Morty?
Yeah. I think we would.
So is there a level... I mean, what do publishers need to do then of licensed product to help us sell their books?
First and foremost, I mean, as far as the IDW stuff goes, we were filling out our initial order yesterday. And what was the comment that we both made? Too much licensed stuff.
Oh, yeah, and trying to fold everything into a... Well, okay, so if we talk about continuity sells comic books to a point, would too much initial continuity put people off of buying a comic book? If you want to get into the Revolution universe that they're doing, tying everything together, does it now make it that much harder to sell someone an issue of ROM because they think that they might have to read Mask and Transformers and whatever the hell else they're putting into that line that they're making now? Is that something that where they've done too much with it?
Oh yeah. I think that so, and this kind of goes back to our friends at Valiant too. I was reading Divinity? Descender.
No, Divinity.
Divinity, yeah.
Descender is Image Book.
Image Book. I was reading Divinity, loving the first trade. Hit the last two pages, and everyone from the friggin' Valiant universe came in, and I was instantly turned off. I'm done. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. And I think that forcing a universe to that scope is dangerous. Now, I guess I can eat my own words with Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, things like that, where you're folding in the entire DCU. But I think when you're trying to force the issue with different types of properties like the Hasbro lines and trying to fold them all into one, I think that you just force too much and it just doesn't feel natural.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just me.
Well, that was the question.
I feel like I'm on an interrogation, which is awesome.
Well, no, we're just trying to get to the bottom of a licensed product.
What about you? What's your thoughts? Why don't we sell Doctor Who?
Well, I think that I think that we put a certain amount of stock into them selling themselves, which, again, it comes back to if people don't know that we're selling it, how will it sell itself? There's not going to be ads for a Doctor Who or a Sherlock comic book during the television show, you know? So you have to make people aware of it. I don't think that we do our job in that regard. But I don't think that...
Then let me add a piece to that.
Go ahead.
Is it worth doing that for the two issues that we may have of each of the Doctor Who books that come out? Is it worth creating a display and, you know, campaign around those? Or is it better to do Star Wars where we're bringing in 40 copies, 50 copies? Deadpool where we're bringing in 35 copies?
Well... Yeah, but if that stuff is selling itself, then that's great. You know, do we need to focus on the other stuff, though?
Is it selling itself on its own? I would argue no. I think that part of it is us making customers aware that it's there. And I feel like there's more upside potential to a Star Wars book, a Deadpool book, a Spider-Man book, a Batman
book.
Yeah,
I think there is too.
So why is there more upside?
Okay, here's a simple thing that we could put out there. If you are Titan, why not send out... Marvel puts out promotional posters for just about every book that they... Well, not every book, but for a lot of books.
A lot of the new number one launches.
DC does the same thing. Image does it. Maybe Titan starts making promotional posters for Doctor Who, you know? But at the same time, how hard is it for us to print out an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that's... Well, it's hard right now because the printer doesn't work. But how hard is it for us to print out something like that that says, you know, Doctor Who comics sold here, and we just put it in the window? The picture of all the doctors. Maybe we should try it. I don't know. I liked this question.
Yeah.
Of licensed product. It made me think. That's why I'm harping on it and interrogating you.
See, this is how it is when even the microphone's not rolling. We just come up with questions, push them on one another, and get the answers and see what we can do, what can make us better. So you're basically sitting inside the mind trust of Cowabunga Comics right now as we try and figure ourselves out. So then the next part of that question, though, you asked was independence. How do they fit in?
Right. And what do we decide? You can't – we've talked before about the – for the longest time, it was what's going to be the next Walking Dead. Yeah. 25 years ago, 28 years ago, it was what's going to be the next Ninja Turtles. It's not going to be Fish Police. So everybody, for a while, everybody wanted to get on that. And then the problem is, it's sort of like you'd buy all the number ones when they came out. You'd buy Bedlam, and you'd buy... I don't know, whatever the other stinkers are. So many that I can't even think of at this point that everyone bought 20 copies of because they thought it was going to be the next big thing. But then just when you're like almost done doing that, here comes Saga.
Here comes Seven of Eternity. That's,
right. That's, damn it. You know, Saga, I had 5 copies in my hand of the first issue, first printing, and I didn't pick it up because I was burned out on it. And I have a short box of junk. And then everybody just kind of gets hooked again. And they're like, well, I got to keep going because it's like people at Pottawatomie casinos where they go, you know, I'm down to my last $20 and I'm already out $100, but this next one, this might be it, you know? And now I'm down to 10. Now I'm down to 5, but I,
but then at 5, I won 80. So now I'm back in.
Sure. So I don't know. I think at some point as a retailer, we realized that your Image is putting out so many new number ones. We probably can order all of the new number ones, but we're not going to order 15 copies of each one. We might order 2, maybe even 1. If we're like, you know, this is a book that we'll give it a shot, but yep. I don't think we might order 1 or 2 copies of the book. But that's pretty much it, you know?
Yeah. And that, you know, we were actually, again, we were filling out our initial order yesterday and we were talking about this with stuff. It was that age old question of, do we get all of them? And the answer is no, we don't. We don't get every single new image series that comes out. Shame on us if we're missing something, but so far it hasn't hurt us too bad. And quite honestly, again, it goes back to we sell what we know we can sell. If they give us preview pages and we look at it and it looks good and interesting, yeah, we'll take a flyer on it. Why not? But usually we buy what we know we can sell. And I think, well, Image is a different beast, right?
Right.
And that's something we should acknowledge. I think part of the good and the bad with Image is you get things that are a Green Valley. Mm-hmm. 6-issue miniseries. How many things in Image now?
7?
7.
I think.
Yeah. How many things in Image are coming out that are miniseries now? What's the likelihood that that number one of that miniseries is going to be like a Saga number one? A Walking Dead number one? That... 5 years down the road.
Oh, the odds are horrible.
Exactly.
But even with that, Paper Girls is a great example of a book that we were not going to miss the boat on Paper Girls. We ordered big.
And we sold them all.
But it was a new Brian K. Vaughan book. It was billed as kind of a Brian K. Vaughan doing mature readers female Goonies, and we said, well, how can
it's a fun book
children of the 80s not pick that up, right?
And it's great.
It is a great book, but we ordered heavy on that.
Yep.
On that book, on the first couple of issues, and we still didn't order heavily enough on it.
Yep.
And you know, that's another thing where,
and now we've settled into a
right. We've got a
subscriber base.
Correct.
Right.
We should have known. I mean, should we have gone higher? I mean,
well, and that's the
thing.
How can you know? We always sit there, like whenever a new Brubaker book comes out, we sit there and we him and haw. Do we get 20? Do we get 30? Do we get 50? Do we get 10? You know, you never know. And so you always.
Well, you never get only 10.
Well, it's touche. With a Brubaker book, you never only get 10. But it's one of those things where as a retailer, you have to go in with a conviction and you have to accept the results either way. And if you're going to get bitter at someone or something that it didn't shake out the way you wanted, that you're not going to ever be happy.
Well, I think Kirkman is a great example of a guy who has excellent branding. I mean, Walking Dead, it's a powerhouse. We know that. Everybody knows that. But Robert Kirkman is not. It's an interesting thing where he has one of the most successful comics of the last 50 years. I mean, in how it has transformed into being a part of popular culture. The only thing I can think of that really comes close to that is Ninja Turtles. And that's even being creator owned. Wolverine as a character is arguably as big, but I think Walking Dead's more prevalent in pop culture. But Kirkman himself is not, he hasn't created a brand for himself. You would think that with the success of Walking Dead and the fact that, you know, here's Chris Hardwick's show where for whatever reason they have, like, and I just want to, it's just kind of a personal gripe. I think the way that they pick people to go on that Talking Dead show is like with South Park when they were making fun of Family Guy. How they have manatees that grab random idea balls. It's like they'll have like Lil Jon, the actor that plays Heath, and Barabbas from like the Old Testament all in one show. And like they all just sit there and I don't get that show. That's neither here nor there. Robert Kirkman should be selling a lot more copies of books with his name on it. Outcast should be a much bigger seller. Invincible should be a huge seller, but Kirkman has a hard time selling books. So at this point, just because Robert Kirkman's writing a book or it's under the Skybound imprint, we don't really go heavy into it anymore. It reminds me of when in the early and mid 2000s, when Tarantino was, and he's still a huge movie maker, but I don't know if you remember this or not, they used to take a bunch of movies and they would brand them with Quentin Tarantino Presents. And they would be movies, like there were a lot of foreign films that you would go to Blockbuster or Hollywood Video and it was Quentin Tarantino Presents, whatever this movie is. And it would be a movie that he had nothing to do with other than
they put his name
localization over here for the DVD. But it sold because it had Quentin Tarantino's name on it. I think at this point, Kirkman is kind of at, and he's still putting out great work with Walking Dead and Invincible, but he's sort of at that Quentin Tarantino Presents stage where a lot of that stuff that comes out under Skybound and a lot of the stuff he puts out almost feels Mark Millar-ish. Like, it's just...
Well, here's a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What if on the books it said Kirkman Presents or something like that?
Well, but that's my point. I don't think that he has a name brand to sell a book. And he, right now, I think Walking Dead, Walking Dead Presents, if you put that out, an anthology book, Walking Dead Presents, I think it would sell gangbusters. But
sure.
I think from a branding perspective, we no longer look at, you know, this is a Skybound book, or this is a book that Robert Kirkman wrote a rave review about, or even Robert Kirkman is writing. It's something where what he's created is much bigger than the creator. So yeah, I don't know. I guess with independent books, it's something where, to answer your question, in the past, we would have just ordered a bunch of Robert Kirkman books. We're going to order a bunch of them, but you got to be a lot more selective.
Do we dare even tickle the question of the back half of previews with independent books? I feel like the back half of previews is one of those things where we look at all the books that are out there, and we just go, "Oh boy, here we go." You know, it's half the time it's unknown creators.
Now, I love the back half of previews. I actually think it's the most fun to look through.
I agree. Because
you have the more potential to have a diamond in the rough. I also really love the section of previews where they have books, they have fanzines, they have all sorts of just kind of weird periodicals in there that you otherwise... Back Issue is a great magazine. And I think it's Alter Ego Publishing. I think... Is that Roy Thomas that has that company? Or he's like the editor-in-chief or something? They put out a lot of great fanzines and really good books and compilations of articles that have been published in the magazines. Really good stuff. The problem is just nobody buys it, you know? And so I always kind of look at it like, I'm going to order this stuff, and if it sells, great. If not, I guess I'll just buy it at cost, and we're not out anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I really do enjoy looking through the back half of previews. You get the occasional hit company like Black Mask. But Black Mask 2, that's another great example where it was...
Delay.
Our first question. What was their first one? Is it Four Kids Walk into a Bank?
I think we still have issue number one sitting on the shelf.
Huge book when it came out. Just huge. And nobody cares now. And I think a big part of it, and they put out... they put up Black and what else? What are some of the other titles? But they've all been stinkers for us, you know? And I just think it's that sort of burnout and fade away effect where people are looking for the next big thing. And at this point, I don't think it's going to be Black Mask. I think Black Mask sabotaged themselves to a point because they had so many different variant covers that were exclusive to conventions, and they had really, really dumb numbers for a lot of them. Like, you know, they'd have one convention where they only did like 50 copies of a variant or something like that. And I think people check out after a certain amount of covers that they have to get, or a certain amount of hoops that they have to jump through. You go like, you guys have 8 different variant covers this year for conventions alone.
Right.
They're 1 in 50s. I cannot get to 8 of these cities. Maybe I can get to 1. The rest of them I'm going to have to buy online.
Yep.
And what am I going to have to shell out? $100 to $150 of variant cover? And I think people just check out. So I think that's a good example of where a company kind of, I don't know, they screwed themselves by doing that.
Well, and then you've got, you know, for me, Aftershock.
Aftershock is a great company.
Yeah, I'm on, I think, 4 of their books now. And I think that there's a difference there because with those books, outside of really Animosity, the books that I'm getting haven't had a delay per se, other than maybe a trade break.
Mm-hmm.
The quality has been great. And I think as a back half publisher, I don't get the feeling that they're over committing themselves.
Well, here's the thing with Aftershock. And I think this is what's going to set them apart from... Do you remember the other burnout and fadeaway companies? 451 Media?
Yep.
Who's the other big one we had just recently been talking about? They came and went faster than I can even remember. But Aftershock has been very selective with the creative teams. They've been signing top-tier writers, top-tier artists. I mean, I can't...
Fred Van Lente. Phil Hester,
Garth Ennis,
yep.
Brian Azzarello, and when
Marguerite Bennett.
Yeah, when we talked to Phil Hester, we asked him, he's a consummate gentleman. We asked him all sorts of questions about working for Marvel, working for DC. He had the best things to say about, he had nothing bad to say about the other companies, but he had the best things to say about Aftershock. And he was, it just seemed that he was extremely excited to work for that company. And so I think it's really cool that you have a company like Aftershock who's doing what they can to excite and energize creators. And it, and you can tell it's reflected in the titles that they're putting out and the work that these creators are giving. The other thing, they're not saturating the market with variants. Like Black Mask and a lot of the other... Avatar is another great example of a company where I think that they must be experiencing problems of some sort, because Cross is a book that we've talked about before. I'm a big Cross fan, big Garth Ennis fan. I've enjoyed Alan Moore's the sequel to Neonomicon. I can't even, Providence. Garth Ennis's War Stories, Kieran Gillen's Uber. They've got a lot of good books, but the problem is, A, they don't come out on time. B, they'll have 5, 6, 9, 10 variant covers for each issue. Cross was probably the worst offender with that, where it got to the point where for a little while I'd been collecting the variants for the first miniseries and the Garth Ennis stuff, but I just gave up because they would have an unbelievable amount of variants for each issue. And I think that they had announced, and if somebody knows the story behind this, let us know, because I have tried to get answers out of Avatar and I can't get anything. What happened to Cross and what happened to Garth Ennis's next storyline that was supposed to be, I think, a 10-issue story? It was supposed to have come out last year. I think Aftershock is not, they're not saturating the market with covers. They're not burning themselves out by pumping crap out, which, let's face it, happened with Cross with Badlands. It started out being a twice-monthly book by a rotating creative team. And if you were a variant collector and you had two issues of each of that title coming out a month, that was 15 or 20 variants you had to pick up. And a lot of them you're paying $20, $25 a piece for.
Right.
So Aftershock seems to just be doing everything right. They almost kind of strike me as our approach to the store, where they're collating books, the type of books people want to read, the type of creators people want to read, and they're taking a slow and steady approach. They're not throwing out 100 titles. It's all high quality stuff.
Now, what about even smaller ones? So, was it Albatross Funny Books? That's Eric Powell.
Yeah,
he's got maybe what, 2 titles going at any given time. He's got Hillbilly and Goon right now.
Yeah, he has another one coming out soon called Nam Wolf, I think. But a guy who goes over to Vietnam and he's a werewolf.
You talk about a nice guy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, when we talked to him in San Diego, what a nice guy. Not what I would have pictured from, the creator of Goon.
No, he was very cool. Well, he's another guy that's sort of almost on the, he reminds me of Dave Sim in a way, where he just sort of, which could be an insult or a compliment, depending on your view of it. He just kind of does what he wants to do. He puts out the Goon, or he'll put out Hillbilly, and he puts out product that he wants to work on, and it'll come out when he's ready to have it out, and that's pretty much it. It's all high quality stuff.
That's the thing. I think it comes down to quality. I mean, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
A high quality book can sell itself. I mean, you got, I don't know, anything else you want to call out from the back half that jumps out at you?
No. Again, I think the Alter Ego fanzines are some of the best written books on the market. I think if you're a fan of basically anything from the 30s up to, late Bronze Age comic books, you owe it to yourself to pick up an issue of Alter Ego or back issue. And they've got, I try not, I don't read a lot of magazines these days. I mostly spend, if I'm going to read articles, I'm going to read them online. If I want to read news that's breaking, I'm going to read that online. But back issue is really, really good. And I think that they have excellent interviews, excellent content, excellent stories. you really owe it to yourself to try out an issue of a back issue or Alter Ego. Really good stuff.
I just thought of another back half publisher.
Who?
Heavy Metal.
I mean, Metal, yeah, absolutely.
Grant Morrison.
Yeah, we still don't sell a ton of it, but, you know, we tried.
Mm-hmm.
Points to us.
Yeah. Well, anything else from a publisher standpoint that you can think of? I don't know if we necessarily gave full answers on stuff, but we sure talked about a lot.
We did. No, not really.
Okay. Well, if anyone out there has any thoughts or questions, as always, shoot them our way. But for James and myself...
Also...
We're going to pause for him to give you more info.
Let's throw this out.
Sure.
If... I think it would be cool if we had... So I just brought up Crossed and how I've tried to get answers out of Avatar about what's going on and been nothing, you know? If you have a publisher, we can reach out to... I mean, with the internet, everyone's connected, but we still can reach out to certain people that might give us a little bit of a better avenue for getting an answer than just a random reader on the internet. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question about a book or a title or whatever, shoot it our way, and, you know, at the very least, we'll try to pass it on and see if we get an answer for you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's going to close out this episode of Shop Talk.
Agreed.
10 o'clock, it's time to close the store and call it a night.
Done deal.
All right, we'll talk to you all next time.
On behalf of all of us, thank you for listening to this episode of Cowcast. You can find us on all the main social media outlets, including Facebook at facebook.com/IncrediCow, on Twitter at IncrediCow, or on Instagram at Cowabunga Comics. To send an email to us directly, send it to podcast@cowabungacomics.com, or to join in the discussion, you can hop on our new Cowabunga Comics forum at forums.cowabungacomics.com.